This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Last night, the Republican debates. Tonight, the Democratic debates. Boy, it was fascinating last night to watch the Republicans eat their own. It was getting pretty grim there. And a lot of the deification of Ronald Reagan. I'm going to get into that as we get on through the program here today. You know, what is the real legacy of Ronald Reagan? And ask that question and get into it. Right now, however, with us is the Honorable Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, the former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland. She served 2 years as the Deputy Assistant Attorney General in President Bill Clinton's administration. And Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. I believe you wrote a book, did you not, that we talked about on the air?
Yes, you are so good to remember. We talked about my book, Failing America's Faithful.
That's right.
About how the churches have shrunk God and only focused on three narrow issues and lost their dedication to social justice.
I thought that was a marvelous book, by the way.
Thank you. Well, I've enjoyed I enjoyed writing it and also talking about it. And to tell you the truth, Tom, I think that the churches are shifting. And I think they are coming around more to social justice, so it's very, very exciting to watch that.
Yeah, back to social justice. I mean, you know, social justice is the foundation of all the world's great religions.
There's always, I think, the tension between social justice on one hand and power on the other.
Yeah.
And when you focus on these more issues of narrow morality, I think it's mostly about the church's power.
Yeah,
and saying we're good and you're not, rather than how can we help one another.
Yeah.
So I think it's very exciting that we're realizing that we are, you know, we've got challenges of poverty, and we've got challenges to the middle class, and we've got challenges to our environment, and that we have to pull together.
Now, I find it very interesting that, if I may shift to contemporary electoral politics here, that in your family, Ted Kennedy has come out and endorsed Barack Obama, and you and your brother Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and your sister Carrie Kennedy have all endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Thoughts on that?
I'd love to talk about it. Well, as you can imagine, in our family, we talk about politics a lot. We don't always agree on everything. I mean, you're a large family, and they're vibrant discussions. That's the joy of it. I actually said to somebody the other day, that's probably why our family has been good at politics, because we're accustomed to having to defend our position as well as listening to the other person and loving them despite their wrongheadedness.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned also Caroline Kennedy as well as Ted Kennedy endorsed Barack Obama.
Yes, absolutely.
I think they're
all superb candidates. The Democratic Party just makes me so proud this year. But I think Hillary Clinton is, you know, the best. She's been fighting for the issues of, you know, poverty for all her life. I've seen her do it, and I've seen her also, you know, go up to New York State with people who just didn't like her, were rock solid Republicans. And she listened to them, and she worked with them, and they're coming out for her as Democrats. So this idea, you know, she can be, you know, and has been transformative on one hand, but she's also a fighter. And I think there are real issues out there.
There
are challenges,
ones.
You know, and actually that's in large part what each of us, like Bobby and Carrie, learned from our father, that there are fights to be had.
Yeah, there are. And there are real challenges and real issues. Last night, the Republican debate, did you have an opportunity to see it?
I didn't. You know, last night, my daughter asked me to go to her school to talk about possibilities of going to college. And it was a 2.5-hour discussion with how to send your child to college, and that's what I was
that's where I was last night.
So I missed the debate. Tell me about it.
Well, I just what I wanted to ask you about was some of the significant differences, frankly, between the Republican and Democratic positions on some of these issues, and how you think these will sell in the upcoming debate. For example, tax cuts. The Republicans constantly are talking about tax cuts, but I don't know, frankly. I mean, going back to the Reagan era, when Reagan came into office, we had a $1 trillion deficit, or debt, rather, which was the consequence of money that we had borrowed beginning with the Revolutionary War. When he left, we had a $3.5 trillion debt. There were no tax cuts at all during the Reagan era. All there were borrowings from the future in order to reduce the tax payments, mostly by very wealthy people. And that has been the thread ever since then. I don't think that anybody can make the case that there has been a genuine tax cut since Ronald Reagan came into office, because they, in every single case, it's been, let's borrow more money and put it into the hands of very wealthy people.
Well, you're exactly right. It is very odd what the Republicans have done, except if you think that, if you believe that what the Republicans really want is wealth for a few number of families, that's what they've achieved, because they can do tax cuts for the very wealthy, and they're well enough off to take care of their own families and their own posterity. But for the rest of Americans, we are in hock all the time to the future, because we're going to have to borrow, and it is, I think it's horrendous what they've done, and who are we borrowing from? We're borrowing from China, from Europe, and we're not even taking care of ourselves. The short-sightedness of the Republican Party, I think, is actually coming home to roost, because which is why so few people are as enthusiastic about Republicans as they are about Democrats, where you notice that Democrats are not talking day after day about tax cuts. They're talking about how to build the country, which requires investments and which requires money.
Yeah. Now, Hillary Clinton has been criticized for going down to Florida and essentially proclaiming a victory in a race that there was supposed to be no campaigning in. But the two things that I find interesting about this, and I'd like to get your take on this as a supporter of hers, is, number one, she got 856,000 votes, more than John McCain did. And Democrats realized, I think most Democrats believed, that that vote didn't even count. And still they showed up and they voted for her. And secondly, that it was the Republican legislature of Florida and the Republican governor of Florida that changed the primary date. And that this wasn't like the Democrats went ahead and did this. And there's a lot of Democrats who are looking at that saying, therefore, the Democratic Party shouldn't have punished them. But there are these other states that have these rules, and the party had these rules and all these kind of things. So just your thoughts on that.
I have a number of thoughts on it. First of all, I think when that many people come out and vote, and they vote overwhelming for you, it's appropriate to say thank you. And not ignore them. I think that I thought she was smart, she was wise, and she was still gracious to go down and thank the voters of Florida. So that's number one. Two, I do think the question of how to do the primaries is a great challenge. I think I think the Democratic Party after this year will have to decide, do we really want this front loading? Do we want, you know, very small, four small states making decisions, and then we move into Super Tuesday. I don't know if this is really the best way to choose a candidate, but I think there will be a lot of discussion about that and how you make sure that every part of the country feels that they have a role to play. I mean, if you're later in the season, you feel that the decision has been made without you. So these are, you know, there's a lot to balance, but I think the Democratic Party can figure out how to do it in a good way. Very frankly, we've had these wonderful candidates. I mean, we're very blessed by Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and John Edwards made a real contribution, as did, I think, Joe Biden and Chris Dodd and Bill Richardson. So,
right.
You know, it's been this amazingly fortuitous primary season. We really have produced great candidates.
I think we have too. And I think it's really important that we amp down the circular firing squad, because the Republicans are going to come along with a machine gun like we ain't never seen before, regardless of who the candidate is ultimately. And on the one hand, we need to prepare for that. On the other hand, you know, we need to keep our candidates strong, I think.
Absolutely. And I think that's what we have to do. It's not, you know, that person is bad. It's my candidate has something to offer. And I think that's what we have with Hillary Clinton, you know, who's had the 35 years of experience, who is a worldwide leader, particularly in women's rights, and has really made a mark for herself on the economy, on health care, and on foreign policy. I think she's, you know, she just comes to this race and to the office of, could come to the office of the president with so much experience, so that when she gets there, she hits the ground running. She knows the levers of power. She knows how to get things done.
Yep.
I think, and I, you know, that's why I'm for. I just think she's been there. She's learned so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry we're out of time.
I want her to use those skills and those talents for our country.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People.
As we celebrate mediocrity, all the boys upstairs want to see how much you'll pay for what you used to get for free. And there goes the last DJ. What he wants to play, says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, here he is. Welcome back, 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Ronald Reagan, last night, the debates, the thing that I found most fascinating about the debates last night was not the tit for tat. This is, I mean, I'm not even going to play the clips from the tit for tat where Willard Romney and John McCain started playing whack-a-mole with each other. Because probably you've already seen them 16 times on virtually all the media on earth, and frankly, I think it's boring. But B, I don't think it was the most important thing. I think the most important thing that happened last night was that we saw that the Republican Party is living in Never Never Land. This deification of Ronald Reagan, it was absolutely mind-boggling. This is a guy, in fact, actually, if you go over to ReaganDebt.com, they've created this group has created this organ, the Ronald Reagan Memorial National Debt Project is dedicated to giving the great communicator credit for the enduring legacy of his presidency. We favor honoring Ronald Reagan's vast contribution to our society by naming the national debt after him, the Ronald Reagan Memorial National Debt. For generations to come, when people think of the national debt, they'll think of Ronald Reagan. It stands right now at this morning at $9,208,812,837,226. Now, when Reagan took office, the national debt was $1 trillion. That was the combination of all the debt run up and paid off in various times. But nonetheless, the entire, all the debt for the Revolutionary War, the Spanish-American War, the Civil War, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, getting us out of the Great Depression, everything. $1 trillion when Reagan came into office. When he left, it was $3.5 trillion. The interest on the national debt is now over $320 billion a year. When Ronald Reagan took office, it was $53 billion a year. This is enough money to hire tens of thousands of teachers a year, to give multiple tens of thousands of college students full four-year scholarships. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing what the damage that has been done to our republic by Reagan's policies. And now, here, I get this news release this morning from one of these right-wing think tanks. And it's, after the rousing endorsement from the Kennedy family earlier this week, some are questioning the comparisons between Illinois Senator Barack Obama and former President John F. Kennedy, reports CNSNews.com staff writer Fred Lucas. Critics of the comparison note Kennedy's hawkish foreign policy and his tax cut policies, which are dramatically different from what Obama is advocating. While Kennedy delivered across-the-board tax cuts, Obama wants to end the Bush tax cuts. Well, let's ask John Kennedy about that, because he was he was right up front about who he was and what he was all about, and that it wasn't about cutting taxes. It was about closing loopholes. He was, you know, at that time, the top tax rate, if you made over $3.2 million a year, your top tax rate was 91%. But he said, nobody making that kind of money is paying those taxes. He said, I know, I'm from a family that makes that kind of money. So let's close the loopholes that allow the high-income people to get out of paying taxes, drop it down to 71%, but actually nail people at that rate, and that will be a tax increase. It'll increase revenues. And here's John Kennedy talking about it.
Yes, I have stated in both the debates and state again that I believe in a balanced budget and have supported that concept during my 14 years in the Congress. The only two times when an unbalanced budget is warranted would be during a serious recession, and we had that in 58 in an unbalanced budget of $12 billion, or a national emergency where there should be large expenditures for national defense, which we had in World War II and during part of the Korean War.
And then he continued.
Third, I think it's possible to gain $700 million to $1 billion
more taxes
through tax changes, which I believe would close up loopholes on dividend withholding, on expense accounts.
He was raising taxes.
So in my judgment, we would spend more money in this administration on aid to education. We'd spend more money on housing. We'd spend more money, and I hope more wisely, on defense than this administration has done. But I believe that the next administration should work for a balanced budget, and that would be my intention. Mr. Nixon mistakes my figures constantly, which is, of course, his right. But the fact of the matter is, here is where I stand, and I just want to have it on the public record.
Here is where I stand, and I just want to have it on the public record, John Kennedy. And, of course, the Republicans are still misstating his record. They're still doing it. And he also, you know, what is a liberal?
What do our opponents mean when they apply to us the label liberal? If by liberal they mean, as they want people to believe, someone who is soft in his policies abroad, who is against local government, and who is unconcerned with a taxpayer's dollar, then the record of this party and its members demonstrate that we are not that kind of liberal. But if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights and their civil liberties, someone who believes that we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
John Kennedy. And I think we have two candidates here who could, either one of them, Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, either one of them, carry that torch forward and do a marvelous job of it. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Well, the Republicans are running like rats fleeing a sinking ship. It's incredible. 28 Republicans now have said, nah, ain't going to run this year. Ain't going to run. And this in a world where, or in a country where, you know, incumbents 97% of the time win elections. 28. Representative Tom Davis, the most recent, yesterday, said, that's it. I'm out of here. He's the fifth guy, the fifth Republican in the House of Representatives this week to announce he's not even going to bother to run in the 2008 election. There are 199 Republicans in the House of Representatives right now, 232 Democrats. That's a 33-person margin on the Democratic side. And keep in mind that, as I recall, it's either 36 or 38 of those Democrats making up that majority, that 33-seat majority, more than that 33 seats, more than the 33 are Democrats who are from largely Republican districts, which, frankly, I think is the reason why Nancy Pelosi has been unwilling to advance impeachment for fear that it will harm those people in those districts. But I think that this is going to be a tsunami. So we'll see. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Marilyn in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Marilyn, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I want to pose something to you that was suggested to me this morning by a friend of mine who's been around Democratic politics for a very long time and is a great progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm on the west side of Los Angeles, where I'm in Jane Harman's district. Henry Waxman has the next district over. Our local group of progressives is having a conflict about what do we do now and do we endorse somebody. And my friend Jim said to me, well, I'm going to still vote for Edwards because maybe 30% of the votes have already been cast, and a lot of those will be for Edwards. And there will be people in our area, there will probably be a concentration of votes for him. And if we could get enough of a percentage, we could get a few delegates. And if neither Hillary nor Obama has a majority going into the Democratic convention, then we have a voice. Then we have more power. What do you think?
I don't think it'll work. First of all, there's a couple of problems with this. I know in some of the states, when somebody drops out, their delegates are reapportioned back to whoever's still in the race based on the proportion that they got, the number of votes that they got.
Mm-hmm.
So Edwards has already lost some of his delegates. I don't have the state-by-state list in front of me here. I had it yesterday. Which states do that and which ones don't. And frankly, I don't know what the rules are in California. But number one, I don't think it would be a good strategy. Number two, also, if we have a brokered convention, if we go into a convention without a clear nominee, you're going to have, since the convention's so far down the road from now, from Super Tuesday,
right?
I think after when we come out of Super Tuesday, the Republicans are going to know that in all probability John McCain is their nominee. And if the Democrats don't know that it's either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, you're going to have 4, 5, 6 months where you're going to have a single Republican out there all the time, and the Democrats are still fighting with each other rather than fighting with the Republican. That's not going to be a good thing for the Democratic Party. It's not going to be a good thing for the Democratic nominee. I think that we are at the point right now where for the general election, it won't be a good thing. We're at the point right now where we have to choose between these two candidates.
So you think we need to wrap it up on Super Tuesday also?
I do. I really do. Because if we don't, then we're going to have intramural squabbling, to minimize it. But that's what's going to happen. I mean, it's going to be, these two campaigns continuing the battle. And when they really should be battling what I think is going to be John McCain.
I hear your point. We are heartbroken. We are heartbroken. Can I just add one little thing at the end here?
Yeah.
I saw you do your book signing in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to many book signings with great authors and Gore Vidal and John Nichols and things like that. The warmth and it was like you were our long lost member of our family who had come home. The reception you got, I know you must have felt really good getting it. And you are just loved by the people who listen to you. And I just wanted to say that to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. That was a wonderful book signing. That was at the Barnes & Noble there in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And so I think we slammed it. I think they had to turn away like 60 or 70 people because
we love you, Tom.
Well, thank you, Marilyn. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
You very much for your time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. And thanks for the call. Oh, my. George in Arvada, Colorado. Hey, George, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was just listening to your stuff about Kennedy and your interview with, I don't know, she was one of the Kennedys. I'm not sure which one.
She's the oldest daughter of Robert Kennedy.
Oh, okay. And that was encouraging, and I was glad to hear that about Hillary because, I have faith in Hillary myself. I mean, I didn't when this whole thing first began, but as I've seen things unfold, I think I have a little more faith in Hillary.
We have been listening for 15 years to the right-wing slime machine about both Hillary and Bill Clinton, but in particular about Hillary Clinton. I mean, they've been trying to define her. Dick Morris wrote a book about her, and Condi being the big race. In fact, we had him as a guest on this program. I think it was last time he was on when he hung up on me. He's the only guy. He's the only conservative who's ever hung up on me. Oddly enough, they've been trying to frame her for a long time in a really negative way, and I think it's time that people get a good sense of what's.
Well, I take that as a compliment, but I'm really starting to get excited about Obama. I'm willing to take a chance on him. I'd much rather have had Edwards or Kucinich, but I'm willing to put some faith in Obama and hoping for the best. And yeah, I agree, McCain is going to be tough. I think I kind of got a feeling Ron Paul's going to kind of squeeze into this thing and throw another rock in the road. And I'm not sure exactly about all the ramifications that it's going to cause.
I doubt it. I'm more concerned about Bloomberg,
frankly. And that's another factor. So, you know, I just hope, I think we're going to win.
Yeah, I think so, too, but it's going to be a tough one. And, you know, the polling right now is showing John McCain against Hillary or John McCain against Barack. In both cases, it shows him pulling out ahead. But I think that that's because that's one single candidate. There's this perception that there's that one candidate. And John McCain has gotten a lot of very good press over the years, much of it deserved, some of it not. And it's really important that the Democratic Party have a single candidate very quickly to begin to redefine to America who John McCain is.
But he is the war candidate, and I think that's going to be a very significant factor.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you for the time.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. Yeah, more wars. The jobs ain't never coming back. Doesn't know much about economics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ed in Tennessee. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, but I'll get better. What's up?
I'm calling from Tennessee, and I rarely get to listen to the show in the middle of the day. My job didn't allow that. But today I had to be on the highway. And earlier, about 30, 40 minutes ago, the host prior to you, somebody had called in, and everybody's disappointed that Edwards dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular host said, he said, I don't want McCain picking Supreme Court justices,
yep.
but I don't really want Obama or Hillary picking them either. And I'm thinking, what the crap? I'd like to have awakened in the Bahamas this morning with $1 million by bank account, but my life is what it is.
Yeah.
My God, if there's any good reason to vote Democratic, I don't care who you supported from Kucinich to Hillary, the Supreme Court justices is the very best reason.
Yep,
for what,
it's
what
a third of government. It's and arguably one of the most powerful thirds of government. And here you have John Paul Stevens is, I think, 86 years old. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in her 70s and she's had cancer. I suspect that they are just hanging on by their fingernails. And some very good people. But, I mean, it's the next president is almost certainly going to appoint at least one, probably two, and possibly even three Supreme Court justices. Spot on, Ed. And it's time for Democrats to pick themselves up and say, okay, we are going to make some decisions and we are going to move ahead. David in Ventura, California. Hey, David.
Yeah, hi, Tom. A couple of things if I could. Number one, we're talking about Obama. We're talking about Edwards. Why can't we have we people who want to vote for one or the other or both? Why is it so hard for there to be an Obama-Edwards ticket on a third party? Then it doesn't matter.
Because it ain't happening, David. Because John Edwards has already, you know, he's taken himself out of the race, and he said, "Keep on fighting. Don't give up. Don't pull yourself back. Participate. Get involved." And I think it's really important, frankly, that we all do that. That we continue to do that. Bob in Flagstaff, Arizona. Hey, Bob.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Wanted to talk about the Florida election, but just before that, you were talking about retirements. There were two more retirements this morning: Ron Lewis in Kentucky and Ken Holtzoff in Missouri.
Republicans?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
And then I have a question about Ron Paul, real quickly. He has so much money. Why isn't I don't see any advertisements for him?
Yeah. Well,
why isn't he spending his money?
Good question. It may well be that I'm not an expert on campaign finance rules and all these kind of things, but I do know that there is a loophole that allows people who raise a whole lot of money to carry that money into other races. So he may want to use that money for his congressional race and make sure that his congressional seat is safe for the next three or four elections. Or he may and I believe that there is, and I don't know if this is in the House or the Senate or both, but I believe that it's possible if you retire for you to take your campaign funds and convert them in some way into personal cash. And so we'll have to – actually, that's a good question for Bernie tomorrow to find out what the deal is on that and how all that works and exactly what it's all about. But, Ron Paul has raised – amazing. I mean, he's raised more money than most of the Republican candidates. And what was so amazing last night in the Republican debates was they completely ignored him. I mean, there were some questions where they didn't even ask him the question. They didn't even give him a chance to talk. Mike Huckabee is whining constantly about, "You're not giving me enough time." And Ron Paul sitting next to him, rather stoically, getting no time at all. So it was pretty amazing. Back to your calls right after this. 45 minutes past the hour. If you want to drop into our live chat room, TomHartman.com or AirAmerica.com, we'll get you there, as well as our blogs and our message boards. Our number, 866-303-2270. We'll be right back.
The Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day,
5 days a week.
Oh, please, Mr. President, I voted for you. Not just one time either, I think it was two. I like the way you said that you would throw away the key. But there's been some kind of error, they came to get me.
Uh-oh.
I need to call a lawyer to straighten this out. No one in here knows or cares what I'm talking about. When we threw out that habeas corpus and those trials, you see, wasn't that for the bad guys, not the good guys like me? Oh, please, Mr. Prison Guard, don't beat me again. Can't you see in other circumstances we could be friends? Won't you let me call my lawyer? I can call him at home. I ain't one of the bad guys, I'm Rodney Malone.
No, I'm not one of the bad
those
guys.
Terrorists and protesters, they all hate the U.S.
Yeah.
They should be gotten rid of, I agree that...
Get rid of those protesters, yeah, but not me!
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. The new definition of the day, electile dysfunction, the inability to become aroused by any of the choices for president put forth by either party in the 2008 election year. Well, we've got to avoid that here and make sure that we get... This is an important election. This might be the most important election in all of our lifetimes, regardless of how long you've lived on this earth. 1-866-303-2270. Stan in San Francisco, California. Hey, Stan. What's up?
Hi, Tom. A couple of questions. One, I'd like you to take the second one real seriously, and you'll see why in a second. You were talking about trade deficits a couple of weeks ago, and I argue with people all the time about this kind of thing, and one person brought up a really good point. Why can't, if there's such a huge trade deficit or tariff imbalance between the U.S. and, say, Japan, why can't the U.S. take that to an international court and challenge it? That's number one. Number two, I argue with people all the time about Ronald Reagan. I know I make good points, but they bring up some good points, too, which I later find out are not valid. Why can't you take this tremendous knowledge you have of Ronald Reagan and make that your next book? I can't tell you how invaluable that would be.
Yeah, well, Stan, thank you. I'm not sure I'm the person to do it, but there actually have been several good books written. Haynes Johnson wrote Sleepwalking Through History, and he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian reporter for the Washington Post, as I recall, and which just deconstructed the Reagan presidency. And so there's no shortage of information out there. But yeah, it's a tough one. With regard to going to an international court, in theory, that's what the World Trade Organization was supposed to be all about, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades. But the fact of the matter is that right now, if you want to make a car in the United States and sell it in China, you have to pay a 20% tariff to the Chinese when you export an import tariff. On the other hand, if they want to make a car and sell it here, they pay a 2% import tariff. And it's like that all over the world. I mean, India, it's illegal in India for Walmart to operate. It's illegal. You can't have a chain store. More than 90% of the retail sector in India is small, locally owned businesses, and they want to keep it that way. But we're saying no. We'll just give it all over to the Walton family, and so anyhow. Barbara in Seattle. Hey, Barbara.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. I get really frustrated when I hear people talking about cutting taxes, and starting with Ronald Reagan, they started the meme and started talking. Getting people to essentially vote against their own self-interest.
Yeah, Reagan did not cut taxes. He borrowed money from the future and spent it. He gave some of it to rich people by decreasing the amount of tax that they were paying, and he gave a lot of it to his good buddies in the defense industry.
My point is that I really wish Democrats would start talking about the fact that the Republicans have done nothing but raise our taxes.
That's right.
With all the incredible spending that we've got going on, somehow the adults can have to come to the party and say we got to pay for it, and it was done on the Republican watch, not on our watch.
Yep, absolutely, Barbara. Well and brilliantly said. The fact of the matter is, this year we're going to spend close to $350 billion in taxes that you and I are going to pay the debt on the deficit that Ronald Reagan ran up. Jim in Marco Island, Florida. Hey, Jim.
Hey there, Tom. I'm a first-time caller. And,
thank you.
I want to thank you for your great work. I think we need more regulators like you.
Thank you.
If you understand the illusion.
The mechanical illusion?
No, the regulators from Shay's Rebellion.
Ah, okay.
Okay, I wanted to talk about Reagan. And
as I recall, Mr. Washington put that down, didn't he?
Yes, he did. But I use it as a handle on the Internet.
Yeah, okay.
I wanted to put Reagan in context. I mean, and also I'm surprised to hear a Democrat, as your previous guest, say that she didn't understand why the Republicans are doing what they're doing. They've been doing this since the monarchy Republican with a small R debate back in the election of 1800, back in Jackson Clay, Civil War, Great Depression of 1888, Hoover.
Well, it really started, you know, when Alexander Hamilton gave his first speech on the floor of the Constitutional Convention in 1786 and argued that the presidency should be a lifetime office.
Right.
And
we disallowed monarchy, but we've very successfully developed a definite, powerful oligarchy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even to the, if you go back to 1933-38, an unsung hero of the Constitution, Smedley Darlington Butler, Major
yep.
General of the U.S. Marine Corps.
Yep, who revealed the plot to overthrow the coup against FDR.
That's right.
By
this has been going on a
Morgans
long time, and Reagan is a very good B actor, bit player on the scene, who did his script well and learned very well as governor of California to become how to act as a president.
Yep, and how to throw homeless people out of mental institutions onto
right,
the streets.
Right, should be instead of the great communicator, he should be called the great deregulator, because you know, you can probably lay a lot of the work that, or the travesty of this mortgage crisis,
yep,
to his deregulation.
Well, this was just, you know, 4 years ago. In 2003, you had, and thank you very much for the call. You had the Bush administration called a press conference where the guys who were responsible for regulating the mortgage industry showed up. One of them with a chainsaw, one of them with a pair of hedge clippers, and said, "We're going to cut regulation. In other words, we're no longer going to enforce the law." And boom, now you got a mortgage crisis. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Evan Goodstein, who is just a great guy, professor at Lewis and Clark College here in Portland, Oregon, has helped create this Focus the Nation program. FocusTheNation.org is the website. And all across America today, over 1,750 institutions, many of them institutions of higher learning, like colleges, have signed up on this thing to talk about what can we do to mitigate the problem of global climate change. What can we do? And this, of course, has a few people upset. One of them is Evan Moore, correspondent for CNS News, cnsnews.com, the website, and focusthenation.org, of course, the other side. Evan, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Just great. And I hope you are well as well.
Yeah, doing
fine. So what's the objection to a national one-day teach-in about global warming?
Well, I wouldn't call myself particularly upset about this because this is, you know, the type of stuff that goes on in colleges and universities.
And that's what they're there for, isn't it?
Yeah, but the people who I've gotten emails from and some of the other talk radio hosts that have called me in to talk about this have been pretty angry that this has received pretty broad-sided support within universities at large. And, you know, within the faculty, and they've basically been university-sponsored political rallies. They're switching straight from the debate over the underlying science of this, addressing it and presenting the case of, okay, global warming is real for XX and X reasons, and they're going straight into the solutions end of this. And the solutions end of this is basically right out of the Democratic Party and the candidates' playbooks on global warming.
Might this be, Evan, because at universities they tend to do fact-based stuff? I mean, it's all about science when you're in science classes, and it really and truly is all about science, and so they're looking at the evidence and going, Here's the evidence. I mean, come on.
Well, maybe, but, you know, bear in mind here that this is a teach-in, which means that the entire campus, not just, you know, their science classes, are, you know, basically holding down activity.
I know, but basically your argument is there's still a debate about global warming, and therefore there shouldn't be a teach-in. There's still a debate about whether the Earth is flat. There's still a debate about whether there's gravity. I mean, there's still a debate about, arguably, about creationism versus evolution, versus punctuated evolution. Certainly there are debates in academic circles about what evolution means, but nonetheless, but that doesn't mean that these things don't get discussed. It doesn't mean that there isn't, that there wouldn't be and if any of those things had the potential to destroy civilization, which if the worst, you know, the most dramatic scenarios that are presented, which actually were considered the conservatives, you know, were considered wildly horrible scenarios a couple of years ago, and now it's looking like, hey, this is actually happening even faster than the Cassandras were saying. If this happens, this has the potential to destroy much human culture and many human lives, not to mention all, you know, other species that are vanishing left and right. I mean, doesn't that deserve national attention?
Well, bear in mind here that if I said, okay, fine, sure, the Earth is flat, and try to make an argument out of that, I would be obviously wrong. And besides, I'm just a journalist. But bear in mind here that actual members of the IPCC, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the authorities on the subject have come forward and said, okay, we don't see the footprint of human activity here. And the Senate has put out a study featuring about 400 scientists in total. Many of you are very reputable, know their stuff. You're not a climatologist. I'm not a climatologist, but they are. They're studying the data. They're saying, hey, whoa, there's still a debate here.
You're talking about people like Professor Tom Addiscott at the University of East London, David Archibald in Australia, Dr. August Auer in New Zealand, Dennis Avery, Nils X. Morner, Donald Baker. I can give you a list, actually, 84 of your 400 who have signed up this thing, who have taken industry money. I mean, here you have a major industry that makes money on pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. ExxonMobil, Olympia Snowe, the Republican from Maine. I mean, you had John McCain talking about this last night, wrote a letter to ExxonMobil's chairman, CEO Rex Tillerson, asking that it, quote, end any further financial assistance to groups whose public advocacy has contributed to the small but unfortunately effective climate change denial myth. Since 1990, ExxonMobil has given these groups more than $19 million. I mean, this is industry and a very ExxonMobil, the most profitable company in the history of the world, going up against science.
Well, bear in mind here that we're not one of my points I was trying to make earlier was that bear in mind here that this isn't just, you know, science classes being let out and, you know, holding a, you know, live conference or teleconference within the classes.
Right, so we're talking about the fate of the planet.
I really cannot address the industry concerns. You said that what it was.
But it's the industry that's paying for the people who are saying that there's a concern.
Look, I cannot address that specific concern. But the people who have raised objections to this and voiced objections to this to me, and people who I talked to on campus, George Mason held its event 2 days ago. There was a bit of a scheduling difficulty, so they held theirs on the 29th. And the students there were being brought in from English classes and PR classes because the faculty was, you know, generally personally in favor of this, and they decided to...
Could it be instead because we're all citizens? And this is something that's going to affect all of us, and so all as citizens, as voters, we need to be informed, even if we're English majors.
There is that precautionary principle, and that was what was raised by the head of George Mason University's sustainability office that, okay, and this was the point that you were making earlier, that, okay, if we don't do anything, then okay, fine, sure. If nothing happens, nothing happens. If stuff does go down, then we have then the moral blame is on us.
Well, this is the point that John McCain made. It's not the point that I made.
That was what you were saying about 3 minutes ago, but, okay, maybe I misheard you. At the very least, that was what was being raised by head of George Mason University's sustainability office, which is their office devoted to, you know, help cleaning up George Mason's, you know, emissions and just getting in touch with ecological harmony.
Yep. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with saying, hey, as I think I heard John McCain say the other night, if we're wrong, the worst thing that's happened is we're no longer giving money to the Wahhabists in Saudi Arabia. And if we're right, then we might have stopped, we might have averted a global disaster.
Because this is effectively not a academic discussion. This is a political reality that is...
My point.
And the people who are looking at this are saying, okay, fine, where's the other side in this?
The coal industry just cranked up their lobbying by $19.7 million, a 20% increase this year, the National Mining Association. You got both last night and tonight, the Republican and Democratic debates being brought to you by the coal industry. I mean, they're cranking up their money and their backing of these global climate change denier groups. So there certainly are several sides on this discussion, but ultimately it's going to require a political solution.
Be that as it may, or be it as it may not, I'm not, you know, in a position to speak for ExxonMobil. I will mention that as a business, ExxonMobil probably has a vested interest in preserving its own existence, and so they're going to invest while they have invested in, you know, Frontiers for Freedom and other more skeptic organizations. They've also invested heavily and by far, far greater factors into organizations and research and means that, you know, look into what may be the next, you know, fuel energy source so that they can latch on to that.
And, British Petroleum is now the largest supplier of solar cells in the world, I believe. At least they were last year. I would applaud those kind of efforts. I'm all in favor of companies making money. I have no problem with that. Where it really starts to concern me is when I see companies promoting a particular perspective that may literally be putting the planet at risk and doing that for making money. That I think has crossed a certain moral threshold that frankly concerns me tremendously.
Well, you're absolutely entitled to your opinion, and so is ExxonMobil's, but what is being the...
No, I'm a person. They're a corporation. They don't have an opinion. It's a corporation. It's not a person.
What is the objection here on, on conservative talk radio and the emails that I've been getting is that, okay, you are effectively saying that the university supports exposition, which is admittedly favorable in terms of these solutions.
Right.
And this may lead to a silencing of dissent, when the rubber meets the road in the classroom where these guys have to put up a paper and have it degraded by their professor who have just said global warming is happening, it's real, it's man-made.
Yeah. I understand, Evan. And people can read all about it over at cnsnews.com. Evan Moore. Evan, thanks for being with us.
Take care, sir.
Thank you. 16 minutes.
The Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day.
5 days a week.
Home on the range. Oh, give me a home where no liberals roam. And the folks all think the same way. Where each house has a gun, a big caliber one. And strangers are told, make my day.
Sounds like Crawford, Texas.
Home, home on the range. Where the beer and the cantaloupe lay. Where seldom is heard a three-syllable word, or so, then it's one I can say.
Yes. Well, thank you, George.
Got Condi on the counter back there.
Yeah, welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. You know, this is ultimately what this comes down to. There's two issues here, frankly, I think, in this whole global climate change debate, or issue, topic, whatever. One is the issue of a big corporation versus you. Whose voice speaks out? Louise was just reminding me during the break of when our kids, all three of our children are now young adults, but when they were going through their teenage years and 12, 13, 14 years old, there was all this social pressure and, frankly, economic pressure to smoke. That is to say, the tobacco industry was spending, this was a decade or more ago, they were spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year using cartoon characters and other things to induce children to smoke. Not to mention the money that they were spending spiffing screenwriters and actors and whatnot to smoke in movies and be action heroes and things like that. How do you oppose that? How can one person or one parent or one family speak up against a multi-billion dollar corporation? Particularly when the Supreme Court, in two decisions in the last half of the 20th century, said that speech equals money, and whoever has the most money has the most speech, and a corporation is a person, and they have the right to speak. Say, what? So there's that issue. And then there's the issue of regulation. Being a capitalist, I will say, yeah, I'll just put it right out there. I mean, I've started a number of businesses in my life, built them up, sold them off, made money, done well at it, been very pleased that I have. I own a business right now. It's this radio show. I'm very grateful to our free enterprise system. I think it's a fine thing. So being a good capitalist, I'll tell you, particularly when you go back to the Michigan Supreme Court case, Dodge versus Ford, that suggested that the first obligation of the director of a corporation is to make money for their shareholders. That's their first obligation. And particularly a large publicly traded company, it has to be that their first obligation is to make money for their shareholders. And that's why we need regulation of these corporations. Not because they're intrinsically evil or something terrible is going to happen, but so that when the CEO of that corporation wants to do the right thing, it can be done. Because I'm telling you, right now, the way it is, for example, EPA regulations say you can't put more than a certain amount of benzene in the air. Well, if that causes a loss of profits by reducing your benzene emissions, and you're the CEO of the company, you say, well, we're going to cut back the benzene anyway. We're going to cut it back, even though it's going to cause us not to show as big a profit. We're going to cut it back because there's going to be fewer children getting leukemia and cancers and things. You're going to be out on the street. And in fact, you could even be in court. Stockholders could sue you for that, even though it's the right thing to do. So you get the EPA and they pass a rule and you say, hey, I had to do it. The EPA made me do it, and it's the right thing to do. And that's why you have regulation. A classic example is Richard Nixon and Jack Kennedy back in 1960. This is in the context of civil rights, but it's the exact same thing. This is the Republican frame versus the Democratic frame. Classically, the question, how do we enforce the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education order to integrate our schools? And in a larger sense, how do we deal with the fact that African Americans can't sit at a lunch counter next to whites? Richard Nixon first.
Talked to Negro mothers.
Let me start it over.
I have talked to Negro mothers. I've heard them try to explain how they tell their children how they can go into a store and buy a loaf of bread, but then can't go into that store and sit at the counter and get a Coca-Cola. This is wrong, and we have to do something about it.
But what?
So under the circumstances, what do we do? Well, what we do is what the Attorney General of the United States did under the direction of the President. Call in the owners of chain stores and get them to take action.
Yes, let's beg them. Let's ask them to be nice. That was Nixon's answer. That's the current administration's answer to pollution problems. Let's have voluntary restrictions. It doesn't work, as John Kennedy pointed out.
Senator Kennedy.
Well, Mr. Nixon hasn't discussed the two basic questions. What is going to be done and what will be his policy on implementing the Supreme Court decision of 1954? Giving aid to schools technically that are trying to carry out the decision is not the great question. Secondly, what's he going to do to provide fair employment? He's been the head of the Committee on Government Contracts. He's carried out two cases, both in the District of Columbia. He has not indicated his support of an attempt to provide fair employment practices around the country so that everyone can get a job regardless of their race or color. Nor has he indicated that he will support Title III, which would give the Attorney General additional powers to protect constitutional rights. These are the great questions. Equality of education in schools. About 2% of our population, white people, is illiterate. 10% of our colored population. 60 to 70% of our colored children do not finish high school. These are the questions in these areas that the North and the South, East and West are entitled to know. What will be the leadership of the President in these areas to provide equality of opportunity for employment? Equality of opportunity in the field of housing, which could be done on all federal supported housing by a stroke of the President's pen.
See, and this is what Jack Kennedy says, we've got to do it. We, the people, have to do it. We have to say, this is the way it is. You can't discriminate. If you do, we will put you out of business. You can't pollute. If you do, we will put you out of business. Because society as a whole is at risk if we don't do it right. It's really simple. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
There's no business like oil business, like no business.
yes, I know. Everything about it is so thrilling. Buying up the Congress is just hell. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling like when you're drilling that Arctic well. There are no people like oil people. They smile when it does blow. Withholding technology, they know it's all. OPEC stranglehold on the oil. They only care that they're earning crude on sun, so their profits will grow. This business.
Ah, yes, the wonderful oil business. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Strange things going on out there in the world, I'll tell you. Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe you're crazy.
The Chinese.
Maybe we're crazy.
Want to make sure that they don't have a rainy day for the opening ceremony in August's Olympic Games. So they are experimenting. As Ms. Kwan, the head of the Weather Manipulation Bureau, the Beijing Meteorological Bureau told reporters, for cold clouds below 0 degrees, we use a coolant made from liquid nitrogen to increase the number of droplets while decreasing their mean size. As a result, the smaller droplets are less likely to fall and precipitation can be reduced. For clouds above 0 degrees, we use the seeding agent silver iodide to accelerate the droplets collision and coalescence, producing a downdraft which suppresses the formation of clouds. And then they add this. You know, this is in a story in the Mercury newspaper in Australia. China has long used weather manipulation to increase rainfall in the parched country of the north, firing seeding agents into the clouds using anti-aircraft guns. Whoa. So they're actually going to change the weather for the Olympics. I'm not sure if that's crazy. Anyway. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Evelyn in Longmont, Colorado. Hey, Evelyn, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for letting me on. Sure. Hey, I just thought no matter who is running against McCain, either Hillary or Obama, I guarantee you they're going to pull this because it was pulled way back when I was a young person first voting. They're going to say something like Iran's declared war on us or they've bombed our ship or something, maybe like 2 days before the election, so you don't have time to really check it.
You know, Tom Ridge, after he left the Department of Homeland Security, mm-hmm. I saw this, I mean, on the Letterman show, as I recall. It may have been Leno. It was one of those two-night, you know, evening shows. He came out and said that during the election of 2004, in the weeks running up to Election Day, that he got orders from above, which was presumably Karl Rove, George Bush, or Dick Cheney. He got orders to raise the threat alerts when he could see no reason to do so. And, I mean, they were using fear as a tactic to manipulate politics. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. They have done that before, and they will absolutely do it again, Evelyn. Spot on. Sheila, thank you for the call. Sheila in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Sheila.
Hi, Tom. I had a quick question and a quick comment, and mm-hmm. one is, the first one is if you watched the CNN special on Ronald Reagan last night.
I did not.
It was right after the debate, and they had family members, and one was Ron Reagan, and I believe, now you can go back and review it, or maybe if somebody else will make a comment on it, that Ron Reagan, you know, Jr., he did not believe in supply-side economics.
No, he did not. Ron Reagan is a progressive. He's a very good guy.
Yeah. You know,
when he was doing radio, I was a guest on his show a couple of times.
Right. I
talked about getting him on this show. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Ron Reagan.
I do, too. The other thing is that yesterday we're talking to a lady named Marie who was talking about McCain and telling you all the negatives about him. And just as she was coming to that Chelsea Clinton joke was when Edwards was speaking, so you had to go.
Yep.
Now, I wonder whether or not you think that would be a good idea during the campaign to bring that up at all.
You know, you're speaking of something that I honestly don't know what it was. I mean, this is something that must have flown past me.
Well, this is absolutely the truth, because I heard him discussing it on 60 Minutes. He was in a semi-public group, is what they said at the time. It was like 98 or 99. And here he was in his 60s and got up and said, this is why Chelsea Clinton is so ugly, because Janet Reno is her father. Ha, 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 ha.
You're kidding.
No, you didn't know about that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It became...
it's incredible.
When he was in his 60s, and if you had stood him and Bush side by side, I would have guessed that Bush would have said it if I didn't know.
Yeah.
And first I read about it, and then he went on 60 Minutes and was just regretting it. And he said he would go to his grave regretting that he had said that. I don't know if he was drunk or what the deal was.
Well,
but I just think it was disgusting, and I just wanted
to... I agree.
But you think it should be brought up or not during the campaign?
See, if he made a genuine apology and, you know, a genuine and anguished apology, I'm willing to accept that. I can't speak for Chelsea Clinton though, or her parents. But I don't think that that's the issue, frankly. I think the issues have to be, do we want 4 more years of war? Do we want 8 more years of war?
Oh, I agree.
Do we want more wacko Supreme Court justices? Do we want Lerman?
I know.
Thank you very much, Sheila, though. Appreciate the call. Susan in Oregon City, Oregon. Hey, Susan.
Hi. Tom, I had a question for you
sure.
about these dishonest emails that are going out on the Internet about Obama and the Democrats.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about why the Democrats keep responding to these lies rather than doing the research, finding out who's responsible and exposing them for their lies.
I am sure that people are trying to figure out what the source of these things are. But they've been going around so long and they've gone through so many morphs and permutations, it's almost impossible to tell. You know, the old saying, you know, a lie gets around the world before the truth has put its boots on. It just absolutely appears to be the case. And I frankly doubt that unless somebody starts bragging, you know, unless there's some loose lips someplace, we're never going to know who did these things. So,
Didn't you have a fellow on your show the other day that had done this for the Republicans, but that had decided that he was on the wrong side? And
he wrote a book about it. Yeah, and he was the guy who was there were a variety of ways that he was trashing Democrats, and actually we've had two of them on. We've had two former Republicans on. One who helped John Sununu steal the election in New Hampshire 6 years ago. And the other who was, you know, a professional opposition research guy. Paul, but it happens. I mean, you know, it just happens. Paul in Connecticut. Hey, Paul.
How are you doing, Tom?
I'm fine.
I think the station's wonderful, and I think you're especially wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your kind words.
I think there were 6 people running in the Florida primary, Democratic primary, and not 3. It's my understanding that there were... a massive percentage of absentee ballots. And I have not heard but once anybody on the air say that most of those ballots were cast weeks ago. And the 6 people, I think, who were running was the Hillary from 6 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, the Obama from 6 or 4 weeks ago, and the Edwards from 4 or 6 weeks ago, as well as those people who voted earlier this week.
It would be really interesting to compare those, wouldn't it, on a time graph?
It's my understanding from your station that of the people who voted earlier this week, Obama won. Hillary is going down and saying she won Florida. Mm-hmm. First of all, she violated a pledge to stay away from there, which the 3 of them and probably others signed.
Yeah.
Secondly, this was prior, if these absentee ballots were cast, as many as I understand there are, they were cast prior to Bill Clinton's Jesse Jackson comment about mm-hmm. South Carolina.
Right.
They were cast prior to Teddy Kennedy and Carolyn Kennedy's endorsement of Obama. And they were cast prior to this whole change in direction. And I think to say that Hillary won Florida is very, very misleading.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that the appropriate thing is to say that nobody won Florida because nobody ran in Florida.
Right.
The fact of the matter is Hillary Clinton got more votes than anybody else did. At the end of the day, I'm not sure that you could call that a victory.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm uncomfortable, frankly, with her going down and declaring that victory.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm just going to leave it at that. I don't think that I want to take it beyond that point because, as I've said, we're going to end up with one of these two people as our nominees, and I want to make sure that as they go into that race, they're not bloodied. Norma in Long Beach, California. Hey, Norma.
Oh, hi. Tom.
Yeah, we have about a minute before a break.
Okay,
here.
I had so much I wanted to say yesterday, and I have to find your email because I held on this long yesterday and couldn't get through. How can we get Al Gore to get in now?
It ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. He came to Portland, Oregon a year ago to do his global warming talk.
Yeah, but that was before Edwards dropped out.
Yeah.
I
know.
No. I refuse to accept the fact that it's not going to happen.
Norma, you sound like one of those. There ain't no such thing as global warming, right?
Exactly.
I'm sorry. We have to accept reality. I mean, Al Gore is not going to get in the race. I stood 40 inches from him, 3 feet from him, when I was moderating a Q&A for him after he did his inconvenient. The truth tour here in Portland, and he was asked that question, but from the audience, will you run? And I heard his sigh, I saw his body language, I saw actually how the muscles on his face changed. I mean, that guy was badly wounded by that experience of John Bolton down there, pounding on the windows with all those guys from Tom DeLay's office, of his house being encircled with people with bullhorns 24/7 saying get out of Dick Cheney's house while the vote was still being counted. He was wounded by that. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again?
My old friend Tom Rush. What a good man. And what a brilliant singer.
I don't want your Rolls Royce, mister. I don't want your pleasure yacht. All I want is food for my children. Won't you give me back the job I got?
9.5 minutes before the hour, 866-303-2270. Matthew in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey, Matthew, what's on your mind today?
First of all, I love that you played that song. It was one of my grandmother's favorite songs, and it was played at her funeral, and I just love that song so much. I was calling to talk to you about John Edwards. It took me a long time to pick a candidate that I really supported, and I really, really liked what he had to say, and he seemed the most genuine of all the candidates, and I was really sad to hear that he dropped out. But I was listening to his speech, and some of the language that he used, what he said was he was suspending his campaign. And I thought that sounded weird, and I was listening to Richard Green's show last night, and he had an expert on who actually said that maybe he was hoping that John Edwards was saying that he was suspending his campaign, and maybe if there was a problem at the Democratic National Convention with picking a candidate, we might look to him again. Somebody might say maybe we should run John Edwards instead. If there's a split convention, do you think there's a possibility somebody might look at him and say, he suspended his campaign, he didn't necessarily quit?
No, and it wouldn't matter, even if he quit his campaign. If the National Convention was to decide, for whatever reason, let's say that between now and the National Convention, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's campaigns melted down. For different but coincidental reasons.
Right.
Both of them just said some horrific thing or, whatever. Broke a leg or, God forbid, something happened. Whatever. And the convention's looking around and they're saying, okay, who are we going to get? Whether John Edwards had said, I'm suspending my campaign or I'm quitting my campaign, wouldn't make any difference. If they turned to him and said, hey, you want to be the president, he'd say yes. And if they thought that he was the most likely candidate to win the presidency, they would turn to him. So I think pinning hopes on the nuance of language is a mistake. I think that we need to get it that John Edwards was as unambiguous about leaving as he was about getting in, and as he was about the issues that he so passionately cared about. He made it very clear, this is it for this campaign, and but don't stop the fight. Keep on with the issues, and that's what we need to do. We need to keep pushing the two remaining candidates to take on these issues and take them seriously, and our existing elected officials. Matthew, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Harry in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Harry, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Glad to talk to you. I was calling in regard to
a news item I saw on the internet, and basically what it is, the country of Iceland is getting ready to launch a ship that's all of its propulsion and systems are powered by hydrogen fuel cells.
Right, and my recollection is that it actually originates as geothermal energy, isn't it? That's being used to through electrolysis to split water and produce hydrogen.
I believe that's probably true. I don't know all of the details. I'm driving in my car right now. Don't have the.
Iceland is a great example of a country that has taken a natural problem, you know, all this waste heat from being so close to all these volcanoes, and turned it into a natural resource. And that's the kind of thing that we need to be doing all over the world. Harry, thanks a lot for the call and for the heads up. Lee in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Hey, Lee, what's on your mind today?
Well, people are calling, and I've heard on other shows people calling about Hillary Clinton coming to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I live in Florida, and I'm not a Hillary Clinton supporter.
Mm-hmm.
But she came down after the polls were closed.
Right.
And meanwhile, I don't watch TV very much, and I have MSNBC on sometimes, and I have seen before the election, not after, before the election, ads for Barack Obama. So
right. He had been doing national.
Well,
he bought national. That's very interesting. He bought national spots on MSNBC because I saw them too here in Oregon, nobody's campaigning here in Oregon. And I've seen ads for Barack Obama on the Chris Matthews show on Hardball. And at the time, it struck me as odd that why spend money on a national buy? That would be a very slick way of getting into Florida without breaking the oath or whatever it is. That's a fascinating one. Lee, thank you for that. Very interesting. Brian in Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Brian, what are your thoughts?
How are you doing, Tom?
Just great. What's up?
I found a little sleep. I worked a night shift.
Oh, sorry.
I agree with you 100% all the time, but I noticed that a lot of times when your callers call in and say, I'm not going to vote for Hillary, and they say this on a constant basis all the time,
mm-hmm.
and I hear you say, well, any candidate would be great. Hillary would be good. John would be good. Barack would be good. I'll vote for any one of them, but I have a huge problem with Hillary. Hillary Clinton is not something we should do again. We've been there already. And I just keep thinking these two families, the
yeah.
Clintons and the Bushes, we have to step away from them. If we want to be able to have complete change, we have to step away from them.
And I think that I know, Brian, that you're echoing a concern that many Americans have, and that the whole idea of dynastic politics is something that makes me uncomfortable as well. And at the end of the day, it's not your decision or my decision uniquely. It's the decision collectively of all of us in the United
Correct.
States. And when the majority of the Democrats in the Democratic primaries, and there's a few where there will be independents as well, but mostly it's going to be Democrats, when the majority of the Democrats have spoken and have decided on the nominee, the choice that you and I are going to have is it going to be that nominee, even if it's Hillary Clinton, and who is going to be appointing the next couple of Supreme Court justices, and who is going to be deciding to veto or not veto legislation, and is going to be deciding whether or not to add signing statements and things to things, or is it going to be John McCain or Mitt Romney? And frankly, there's just, in my mind, it's a no-brainer. It's just simply a no-brainer. If we don't have a Democrat as president this time next year, we've got a real problem as a nation. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with Mark Green about his take on the debates last night and what's coming up tonight. Stick around.
Exposing the con in conservative con. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. At the same time Rudy Giuliani had been elected to be the mayor of New York City, Mark Green was elected to be the public advocate for New York City, the man who spoke on behalf of the people. He's the author of about as many books as I've read, 20-something, and he is currently the president of Air America Radio. What? And frankly, let me add to this bio. In my opinion, one of the most astute observers of the political scene, and I don't say that because arguably you're my boss, Mark, but you and I have had a number of discussions off the radio about politics.
Look, I liked it when you said I was 20-something.
Yeah. No, seriously, though, you and I have had a number of conversations, like, you know, over dinner kind of conversations about politics.
Sure.
And that have just blown my mind. And I keep saying to Louise, you know, we've got to get Mark on the air. And I've been a little reluctant to do it because, you know, you put your boss on the air kind of thing. But man, you've got some things to say here. So I want to pick your brains for a few minutes, if you don't mind.
Sure, no. The price is right.
Yeah, you've spent your life in politics and you know all these people. I mean, so anyway. Paul Loeb recently wrote a piece about why it's titled "Why This Edwards Voter Is Now Backing Obama," mm-hmm. and I'm not asking these. I don't want to toss these out in the context of I'm in favor of Obama or Hillary, or that you are, for that matter. I think that
I'm neutral because I love them both.
That's right, and I'm taking the position that whichever one, I think they're both great candidates, and whichever one wins, I'm there. But there's a number of topics, and that it's appropriate to deal with. The Iraq War, for example. How will Obama go up against McCain? I'm assuming McCain's going to be the nominee. I think that's a fairly safe bet, first
yep.
of all. How will Obama go up against McCain versus how would Hillary Clinton go up?
I was ardently against the resolution and the war. So Obama has my affection on that particular issue. However, at this point, most Democrats who are against the war split between Obama and Clinton. Clinton's obscured the difference. Mm-hmm. My guess is, all things being equal, Clinton is stronger on the war issue in a general election against McCain because he's going to say he's already done it. The Democrats and Hillary Clinton want to wave the white flag of surrender.
Right.
And it's disgraceful, disgusting, notwithstanding his war heroism. And my guess is Hillary Clinton has been somewhat tougher on the issue pre, during, and after the Iraq invasion. And that would play better, not in primaries, I agree with that, but in a general election.
Yeah, and also she may acquire some patina of, you know, her husband in the Kosovo thing, and you know, yeah, Bill Clinton wasn't afraid to use
Wes Clark all over her, and you know, he won that. And she sits on the Senate Armed Services, and probably has more bona fides on that issue, although it's hurt her marginally in the primaries.
Yeah, you, I'm assuming you saw the Republican debate last night.
Actually, I didn't. I was traveling, but I read about it. By the way, as Ronald Reagan said of Redwoods, mm-hmm. scene one, you've seen them all.
You're right. It really was a lot of rerun last night.
So if you want to kick me off your show now.
No, I was just, you know.
But go ahead.
I'm curious about how you think the Republican campaign is going to evolve. What's going to come out of this?
Well, it's going to be McCain. I'm surprised. I thought that when the economy rose to be the preeminent issue, that Romney would win Florida and keep going. Because, like him or not, he has a story to tell on the economy. I'm a businessman. I know numbers, and I can turn around the economy like I turned around the Olympics.
Yeah.
Guess what? Voters who thought the economy was the number one issue split evenly.
Mm-hmm.
Voters who thought national security was the big issue split broke for McCain. So I think McCain will be the nominee. Look, I'm not being a partisan Democrat when I say this, but we have a luxury of riches. I really believe that. They're in a deficit. Each candidate has grievous problems. And
on the Republican side.
On the Republican side. Yeah. And so while McCain has a life story that you really can't argue with, given his heroism, it's true. It's not like Reagan's heroism, which was in a movie. He played a right. hero. But he is older, he's awful on the economy. Mm-hmm. Basically, he's Bush 3, although he doesn't look like Bush. More tax cuts for the rich, nothing in terms of universal health care or more coverage for children's health insurance. He voted with Bush on not allowing 10 million more children. So on domestic issues, he's awful. On international issues, if you like wars, if you like a weak economy, vote for McCain.
Yeah, well, this was right after the Florida primary. This was Joe Scarborough and Pat Buchanan. This is just 30 seconds of this. Joe Scarborough and Pat Buchanan tossing the segment back to Keith Olbermann. Just listen to this.
If he wins this thing, I think they're going to say, well, it looks like he's the guy. But I'll tell you, here's a guy basically, what does he say? The jobs are never coming back. The illegals are never going home. But we're going to have a lot more wars.
We're going to start a lot of wars. He has promised, for the record, Keith, John McCain's platform, and it's
certainly looks inviting for the fall. He has promised less jobs and more wars. Now, that's something we can all rally behind. Back to you, Keith.
No, I'm not saying a word.
No, you don't have to. John McCain's already said it.
Yeah, I'm not saying a word. It's too. I'm not saying a word.
I'm a Pat Buchanan Democrat, apparently.
There you go. I mean, it's...
By the way, they're tied today in polls, but that which is not in any way
who the
decisive. McCain and Clinton and Obama.
Oh, really?
Yes. In national polls, they are within 1 to 2 points of each other. So, at which, by the way, and Obama and Clinton separately are 13 to 15 points ahead of Romney.
Mm-hmm.
So McCain is... Yeah. Statistically, a stronger nominee.
I thought the biggest story to come out of Florida was the one that was not reported on any of the television networks, and I think that the reason why is because they were the recipient of this largesse, which was that Mitt Romney had outspent John McCain 5-1 and you still lost to him.
The best rationale wins. That's what Mario Cuomo used to say in New York, and it's largely true unless you're overwhelmed, really overwhelmed and capsized by money or external events. But I am surprised that 45% of exiting Republican voters in Florida said the economy was number one. 15% said Iraq, yet McCain won.
Yeah.
And so it takes time for your rationale to sink in. And Romney alighted on this rationale that he's a businessman with economic experience. And McCain really stepped on it when he said, I don't really know that much about economics.
Yeah, that was a big mistake. One of Paul Loeb's points is the youth vote. He says, if a party attracts new voters for their first few elections, they tend to stick with the party for the rest of their lives. And, you know, I certainly saw this with my father and grandfather's generation. And to a large extent, my own. I mean, I became liberal or progressive, whatever you want to call it, when I was probably around 16, 17 as a result of the Vietnam War initially. And here I am still. Although I had been a Goldwater Republican before that when I was 13.
You and Hillary.
You could have dated
when you were tweens.
Well, she's a little older than I am, but I went door-to-door for him when I was 13 years old in 64. But in any case, there's no doubt that Barack Obama will bring and has brought enormous numbers of young people into the Democratic Party. If he is not the nominee, how can Hillary bring those people in and hold them? Or if he is the nominee, how does the Democratic Party hold on to
That's
him?
A good argument. Maureen Dowd in the New York Times today said, Gail Collins in the New York Times said, if you're reading this, your son is for Obama. Right. My son is for Obama. I mean,
that's interesting.
And so obviously he's inspired far more young people to get involved and get voting. The corollary is Hillary Clinton is stronger among 60 and over. But your point is when you hook them young, they can stay around for 10 election cycles, three election cycles.
Yeah.
It's an advantage for Obama. But when people are voting in the this Tuesday is going to be decisive. Of course, we say that every Tuesday. People vote. I don't think many people will vote with that level of Paul Loeb level sophistication that, gee, let's get, if they're equal in other ways. By the way, Obama and Clinton are both super famous, super money, super smart, and they're very similar in their views. You know, what happens is small differences are exaggerated because they're so close in delegates in every other way. They are both cautious, center-left, progressive Democrats. When Obama has been picking on Hillary for this vote or that vote, I am sure their ACLU and ADA voting records are both like between 90 and 93.
Yes.
They are very similar.
Well, this is the point the Republicans have been making. They're both liberal Democrats.
Well, they're not that liberal.
Over 90%.
Well, you know, gay marriage. They're careful on some issues because they don't want to be, that neither of them are for single-payer health care tomorrow. But I don't think many people will be voting based on who brings out the youth vote. But if all other things being equal, that's an advantage to Obama, no doubt.
Yeah, and something that Hillary Clinton's campaign really needs to work on, because you know the first woman to be elected is a huge transformational and transitional thing. You'd think that would energize young people.
Well, it probably will energize young women.
Yeah, hopefully. So we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. Mark Green, Mark, thanks so much for being
here. Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman radio program, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, airamerica.com, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
What's Bush got to do with it?
What's Bush got the mountain line unspoken? What's Bush got to do with it? Who needs a law when the law can be broken?
Who needs a law when a law can be broken? No, that's what Bush has got to do with it, I'll tell you. Yes, indeed. 21 minutes past the hour. Here's something that's got me scratching my head. I'm wondering about this. Looking at the Drudge Report, you know, reliable right-wing mouthpiece. And the top headline, Obama ranked most liberal senator in 07. And then below that in red, Obama breaks fundraising record, 32 million, 170,000 new donors for January, developing. And then the Rasmussen poll, the national poll, McCain 30%, Romney 28%, Clinton 42%, Obama 35%. But the interesting thing is, you know, Obama ranked most liberal senator in 07. So if the new Republican and Louise received this morning from the Republican National Committee the daily talking points for the Sean Hannity show, which is, I'd say that facetiously, but it so often seems to be the case. Anyhow, this is the daily talking points that the RNC sends out. And the headline is Obama, number one liberal senator. Nonpartisan National Journal ranks Barack Obama the most liberal senator of 2007. So, here's the question. Are they saying this? Are the Republicans saying that Obama's the most liberal senator because they're trying to charge up their base? I mean, obviously there'll be some element of that. But to the extent that they're trying to influence the Democratic primary, are they doing that because they want liberal Democrats to get engaged, to move away from John Edwards, who's pulled out of the race and attached themselves to Obama, or because they're afraid they will? You know, how strategically are they thinking? Or is it simply, hey, this is the story, this is our story, this is what we're going to go with? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. NYSA. Is it NYSA? Am I pronouncing it right? In Fort Collins, Colorado? NYSA or NYSA?
Yeah, it's actually NYSA.
NYSA. Hi.
Yeah. So basically, I called in today to explain why I'm going for Obama. I've been going for Obama since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I have two big reasons for this. The first reason is that he's been, with the possible exception of Edwards, probably the most consistent on the Democratic side as far as I can tell. I like all the Democrats, he's also been the one who I think will help out my particular class. I'm not even considered middle class. I'm lower class as far as money goes. I'm well
working
below
class.
The poverty line. So,
And you think Barack Obama is the guy who would be the champion for people who are really having a rough time in this economy right now?
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that Barack Obama will be a champion for people like you. I frankly think Hillary Clinton will be as well. I am, at this point, I have not made up my mind. I mean, if I had to vote today, I don't know how I would vote. I honestly don't. I'm still trying to figure this one out. But NYSA, was it?
Mm-hmm.
NYSA?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the call and for your thoughts, for, you know, sharing that with us. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Don in Sonoma, California. Hey, Don, what's up?
Grace and peace, Tom.
Thank you, Don.
You know, I have to ask, cajole, beg your listeners and you to walk a precinct. Get to know the people around you.
Yeah.
If you favor Obama, fine. If you favor Clinton, fine. If you favor John Edwards or Denis Kucinich, then keep their legacies alive by walking a precinct. And then use it as leverage. And by leverage, I mean to get lean, green, and clean.
Yeah.
New jobs in the green economy.
Yep.
Home cisterns, solar panels, regional landscaping of yards, you know.
Yeah,
there's a lot to do, but walk the precinct. And if you can get a show where you walk the precinct on a remote, I think it would get national publicity, and it would really fire up the troops.
Yeah, see, I think on television that would probably work. On radio, it would be dreadfully boring, because if you've ever walked a precinct, and I have,
yeah,
you know that 90% of it is walking from door to door and knocking on doors and having nobody answer them. But I get your point, and your point is well taken. Don, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. You're spot on. We have to get active. That's the bottom line. Charles in Carmel Valley, California. Hey, Charles.
Hi. I have a couple quick points. Can you hear me?
Sure.
I think the main problem with the Democratic leadership in Congress is that they never show persistence in their argument. And that's really important, because when they don't show persistence, it means that they're not committed to any argument.
Well, part of the problem, Charles, is there's essentially a media blackout on many of the Democratic arguments, because they run contrary to the interests and the will of big media. I mean, there was an absolute media blackout on John Edwards. There was largely a media blackout there has been, frankly, on Kucinich and Ron Paul as well. It's all about drama. Now that we have infotainment instead of news, they're always looking for the most dramatic storylines, and that's what they're going to highlight. And it's changing the nature of politics. Politicians are trying to figure out how to be the most dramatic. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us, the Director of Strategic Communications for the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, and the editor of MikeCheckRadio.org. I always get that right. Christy, welcome.
Hello. How are you? Yes, it's .org.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're absolutely perfect on that.
I visit there regularly, but I don't type it in. You know, it's like on my favorites. And anyhow,
it's like how I don't know anyone's phone numbers, because they're all programmed into my phone.
Yeah, it's like technology is making us stupid.
It really is.
It's like we're not exercising our brain cells like we used to. Oh, my. But you certainly have been exercising your brain cells over at the Center for American Progress. This is our What's the News Under the Radar segment for the week. And some of the things that you've been coming up with that, frankly, are not making the national news. You won't see it on CBS, NBC, ABC Evening News, and yet it's probably far more important than 75% of the pablum, the infotainment that they serve out. For example, soldier suicides at record levels.
Yeah, I thought there was a very disturbing pattern this week as I was going through all of the news and trying to avoid the Britney Spears news and get to actual stuff. And there were a lot of little stories that were passed over about the American military and our troops. And I thought it was really important, especially to bring them all together. And there was a new study that came out today that said that suicides among active duty soldiers last year reached the highest level they've ever been since the Army started keeping records back in 1980.
Whoa.
Which is a really, really awful statistic.
Yeah.
Last year, 121 soldiers took their own lives, which is 20% more than the year before. And right now, suicide is actually ranked third in the top causes of death for National Guard members.
Wow.
So I think it's especially really difficult, because there are all of these other stories about, you know, we knew about the Walter Reed and the lack of proper care in places like that. But there are also little stories that come out here and there just about how the military, once the soldiers are back, make it difficult for them to get health care and really give short shrift to post-traumatic stress disorder and brain injuries and things like that that then can lead to serious depression and these suicides.
Yeah, we do a veteran segment every week here with Larry Scott from VAWatchdog.org, and he has been keeping us up to date on just the ongoing rolling disaster that has been the Bush budgets and the Bush administrations. Not just Bush. I mean, it's been the Republicans in Congress right across the board.
Oh, absolutely.
With regard to veterans. I mean, it's just, it's tragic.
Well, there was another story that I saw from upstate New York where it turns out, this one is going to make your head explode. It turns out that the Army was looking at different areas of the country where troops who were turned wounded from Iraq had been applying for disability benefits. Mm-hmm. And they realized that troops up in upstate New York were getting a lot their full share of benefits. Everybody was getting all the benefits they should, and they said, you know, how's this happening? And it turned out that the VA had sent people to help the soldiers get through all of the red tape and the paperwork to apply for these disability benefits. And so the Pentagon said, you're not allowed to do that anymore. We're blocking you from helping veterans fill out their paperwork because too many are getting all their benefits. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about that makes me just nauseous.
Yeah. That's incredible. Now, I saw this article in the Financial Times that the U.S. military is now funding the construction of religious schools, madrasas, Islamic schools in Afghanistan. I was really ambivalent about it. I decided not to go off on it on the air about it because, on the one hand, if we don't build madrasas in Afghanistan, then Afghan parents are sending their kids to Pakistan to madrasas that are just openly nuts. I mean, you know,
right.
It's the loony fringe of loony fringe. On the other hand, if we do build madrasas, we are big time, basically endorsing a religion. I mean, you know, we're something that we should be loath to do. But the fact of the matter is that this is a society that has never been secular, Afghanistan. It has always been religious. I mean, you could argue that Iraq has been a secular society for at least the last 20 years or so. It's a tough one.
I thought this was actually interesting because I felt the same way. You know, it's you have to play by the rules of the country that you're fighting in. And if this is what the military thinks they need to do is build these schools to stop people from sending their kids, like you said, into the really crazy schools over in Pakistan, you know, maybe it makes some sense. But I thought this was interesting because the right-wing conservatives have used madrasas sort of as a catchphrase for terrorism. And they've been quick to, for example, when everyone was trying to smear Barack Obama and say that he'd attended a madrasa when he was young and just use that as a catchphrase for Al-Qaeda, I thought it was just interesting to point out that sometimes even the U.S. is sponsoring these madrasas.
Well,
and it shouldn't have just such a knee-jerk reaction.
Well, and let's take it to the next step. Barack Obama never attended a madrasa.
Well, exactly.
Period. End of sentence. He went to a school, a secular school, a regular secular school in Indonesia, and a majority of the students happen to be Muslim because Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world. But it was not a madrasa. It was not a religious school. And that's a whole different thing from, I mean, that would be like saying that, you know, I going to, you know, Kennan Drive Elementary School, which was, you know, the normal Lansing, Michigan school just down the street from my house, that I was going to a Protestant school. Most of the kids in there, you know, a Protestant religious school, because most of the kids in my class were Protestant. You know, it was not a Catholic neighborhood. It was there were a few Catholics, a few Jews, and mostly Protestants. You know, and it's nonsense. It was a lie. It was a lie that started on Fox News and spread way beyond Fox News. But in any case, point made. The new power plant. This was absolutely bizarre. Between Monday and Tuesday, George Bush. Let me pass that one to you.
It was bizarre, but then after it happened, I thought, well, of course it happened like that. Yeah, on Monday night, President Bush, you know, in his laundry list of all those weird things he was throwing out in his State of the Union, he pledged that he wanted to fund new technologies that generate coal power while capturing carbon emissions.
In fact, he started out the sentence by saying, together we should take the next steps. Let us fund new technology.
Let us find new technologies that
can
generate
night.
Coal power. That's Monday night. Right. Tuesday morning, he canceled the project to fund new technologies that can generate coal power while capturing carbon emissions. there was this project that we've been working on called Future Gen, and it was going to be a coal power plant located in Illinois that would capture the carbon emissions and store them under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been working on this for years. And this was the one project that was actually nearing completion. They'd gotten all of this money for it. And Tuesday, they just decided to, bingo, cancel it. And it's now off the table. It was just very strange. And the administration first said that it was because it had gotten too expensive. It had gone from a projected something like $800 million to $1.5 billion. But then when you look at it, well, that's sort of what inflation did. You know,
yeah.
It's going to cost the same amount in today's dollars as it did when we first started talking about this back in 04.
Right.
And then it turned out that secretly, while they've been moving forward in Illinois to build this thing, the Department of Energy quietly refused to release a piece of paper that they needed to release to allow the building to go forward. So this has been in the works. The cancellation of this has been in the works for a couple of months now.
Hmm. Interesting.
So the State of the Union was just sort of a lie. It was just
that's our bumper
trick. It was very strange.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah, that's our George Bush Tells Lies bumper music. Laura Bush seems to be caught up in this as well.
It is. And I thought this was pretty interesting because no matter what has happened with the president, First Lady Laura Bush, people seem to have liked her, throughout this administration. But in a new Pew Research Center poll, her favorability rating has dropped sharply. Everybody used to like her, you know, and in August 04, her highest rating ever, she had 70% approval rating, which is pretty huge. And in this new poll, it's slipped to just a very, very slight majority of Americans at 54%.
And this isn't because, you know, word has come out that she's a chain smoker or that she treats the staff very harshly and with an iron fist kind of thing. This is apparently just following on that she happens to be, you know, married to George.
Exactly. It's just the rub-off effect where, you know, the hatred of him or dislike of him has gotten so universal in the country that just knowing him now can make people start to not like you very much.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Other things in the news.
A couple of others. I have a Where Is He Now story for you. Do you remember Randall Tobias?
I remember the name.
Randall Tobias was the guy at USAID who last year his name surfaced on the D.C. Madams list.
Oh, yeah. And
he's the guy who had the gals come up to the condo to give him massages.
Yep. Yeah. And it was just a massage. It was just a massage.
I just get massages from the sexual fantasy places, which is what the D.C. Madam touted her business as. He's now up to be the head of the Indianapolis Airport Authority. So
oh
it turns out there are second acts in American life sometimes.
Yeah, with a $95 million budget,
if I'm reading that right.
Amazing. Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications at the Center for American Progress and editor of Mike Check Radio. Christy, thanks so much for being
here. Thank you.
Always great having you on the program. 45 minutes past the hour.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now there's people living out in the street, going hungry with no shoes on their feet, while the government just twiddles its thumbs and spends more money on its guns. And they keep on planning nuclear war. Tell me, who is it they're planning it for? If not the men that make their profits from hate, I swear it seems they can't waste.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors and our affiliated stations. And brought to you in part also by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., on the line with us with our daily news update. Hey, Ellen.
So much going on, I don't know where to start. Let's first start with the president's speech in Las Vegas, where he talked about how 25 million people have been liberated in Afghanistan and the Taliban have no safe place to hide. Now, this is the same time that at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning, Richard Lugar called the situation in Afghanistan grave. So, and then he's a Republican.
Right, right. And he's on the he's on one of the defense committees, isn't he? As well,
yeah,
or intelligence committee.
Yeah, I mean, he's really, he understands what's going on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and the Taliban still runs half of Afghanistan, more than they did before.
Yeah, and the warlords run the other two-thirds, and you've got basically, you know, the
Kabul.
Mayor of Kabul, yeah.
Exactly. So that's the first thing. Secondly, speaking as long as we're on international issues, George Clooney today was at the United Nations today. He's considered essentially an ambassador for peace. And he had just gotten back from Darfur and Chad, which you know is Chad is blowing up. You and I are going to
Kenya.
Region of Darfur.
Yeah.
And he basically said the problem is that they have no equipment, no helicopters. They just don't have. They're totally under-equipped, the peacekeepers there, to
yeah.
keep the peace. And you've got 2.5 million people displaced.
Yeah, and the other big problem right now is with all the instability in Kenya, most of the supplies for Darfur are coming in by the port of Mombasa, and they are not now able to make their way across Kenya because of the political disruptions, and as a consequence, apparently that's causing problems all across the central, the interior of Africa.
Well, it's so interesting because what a celebrity can also do, usually there's like 20 people at the United Nations briefing, but there was 200 today. Pretty crazy. On the budget, today Mitch McConnell got on the Senate floor. He accused the Democrats basically of making a bullet train look like a horse and buggy. These are the Senate Democrats. He also said that if the Senate Democrats are making the bill look like a lot like Christmas. And Harry Reid wants to put 3 votes. Next week, they also want to think about bringing back Obama and Clinton. And don't forget to get your popcorn out to watch that debate tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to do 3 separate amendments, one on unemployment, one on mortgage revenue and how to deal with that, and also how to deal with food stamps and then the fuel assistance bill as well. And then later, maybe on Wednesday next week, talking about rebates for seniors. And even people who have earned under $3,000 a year.
Interesting. So you said fuel assistance. Are they talking about resurrecting LIHEAP?
Why
did, again, I'm banging my head against the wall. You know, the Republicans put forward a bill that's going to give amnesty to George Bush and all the people in the administration who broke the law and the phone companies who participated with them in it, and they call it the Protect America Act.
He just signed a 15-day extension of that. In Las Vegas.
Yeah, but the Democrats put forward a program that literally will keep low-income people, particularly low-income elderly people, from dying. I mean, you know, the low-income, you know, heating assistance program, and they call it LIHEAP. I mean, who wants to vote for LIHEAP? It's a heap of lies, right? Who wants to be even associated with LIHEAP?
Low-income heating something funds, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, it's the low-income heating assistance program. And why don't they, you know, why don't they? It just makes me crazy.
Also today, there was a congressionally chartered commission in 2005 about the readiness issues. It's 400 pages dealing with National Guard readiness. They say that the primary role is to help civilian authorities and to deal with huge natural disasters and unconventional weapons. They said they are completely unprepared for it. The Pentagon, however, responded that they're trying to develop a program to get a special force made. Well, that doesn't really solve the problem of the inability, because they're over in Iraq and Afghanistan, of these local National Guard units to respond to national disasters and other kinds of disasters.
Yeah. And again, it's Bush's failed occupation. I mean, we had a successful war. We took down, it was an illegal war, but we had a successful war. We took down Osama bin Laden, now they've got me doing it. Saddam Hussein's government and seized his country. And now we've had a 5-year failed occupation. And this occupation is breaking our military. It's breaking our National Guard. Go ahead.
Also today at the Senate Armed Services Committee, Major General Bostic said that the desire to enlist in the armed forces is the lowest in 2 decades.
Wow. I suspect it's lower than it's been since Vietnam, and which would be more like, 3 decades, four decades, something like that, some distant time. But
well, assuming Vietnam ended in 65.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 75.
75, yeah.
75,
yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
So there you have it. Also, at the Judiciary Committee, they want to delay one a nomination for the Assistant General because they're not getting information from the Justice Department.
What a surprise. Ellen Radner, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Coming up tomorrow, Bernie Sanders will be here taking your calls, as he has coming on 6 years here. We'll be celebrating Groundhog Day with Paul Hannum. He's got a very special message you won't want to miss, plus the best of the rest of the news right here on the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you, activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.